All right, so I don't know if you, Ray, you didn't have your headset on there. I don't know, Mike, if you just heard that. Kyle, play that again, if you would.
All right, one sec.
Okay. I want to hear that one more time.
Okay, so hold on here.
So what the heck was that?
All right, so for those of you who only listen to the radio station, you don't really get to hear that first voice who just asked Google who's going to win the Super Bowl. That would be the lovely voice of our morning show producer, Mr. Joe Wechter.
Yes, lovely describes it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
and he just sent me in that clip of audio, and he wanted me to let the airwaves know how Google was feeling.
So Google's going for the Eagles there, right? Is that a factor? Big deal. That's a big factor.
Yeah, not in my mind.
All right. Let's get back to the agenda. Kyle, play the next one.
Goff takes the snap, backs up, lets it fly, and it is intercepted! Intercepted! Running with the football is Blackberry, and Blackberry's in for the touchdown!
Pick six!
James Blackberry!
Bradberry!
At least I didn't say blueberry.
I forgot about the Blackberry part. That's right.
And Blackberry's in for the touchdown.
All right. I'm not making fun of Merrill. I love Merrill, but it was...
I am. I'm making fun of Merrill. What do you call him? Raspberry? Strawberry?
Okay.
Come on. It was the first game of the season.
Frankenberry.
I do that at least 10 times a game, a show, as you guys know. So I you know, Merrill gets a break on that.
James Boysenberry with the touchdown.
It was a great play. And there have been so many great plays by this secondary this year. It's another area where going into the year, we didn't know what we had. It wasn't particularly good last year. And they've been brilliant this year. Mike, you wrote a column on Blackberry this week. just kind of give me your overall perspective on the secondary the Eagles bring into the game tomorrow.
Yeah, it's as strong as it's been, I think, since probably the Super Bowl year. You don't necessarily have a Malcolm Jenkins at safety, but the cornerbacks are terrific. I'd argue that James Bradberry, he was voted a second team All-Pro, and I think that's deserved. I think for all the laurels that Darius Slay got early on, I think Bradberry's been more consistently good all year. As Ray referenced earlier in the show, I absolutely think you're going to see him at least part of Sunday's game on Travis Kelce. He's got the size to be able to cover a player like Kelce. You've got depth now and a little nastiness with C.J. Gardner-Johnson back there, and Avante Maddox is an excellent slot cornerback. Between that and the pass rush, that's what you want. And I think, again, to bring this full circle to what we've discussed, that's going to be the challenge for Andy. Is he going to be throwing the ball out of the backfield, to running backs to try to get favorable matchups against the two linebackers the Eagles might have on the field and TJ Edwards and Kaiser White, because those are the soft targets of this defense. The secondary is not.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's exactly right. And if Andy's looking at this, I don't think he's going to want to challenge Bradberry and Slay. And I think that's going to be, there's where your chess match really comes in, is Gannon against Andy, and how the Eagles are going to deploy their cover guys against the weapons that the Chiefs have, because the composition of that offense is a little weird. It's so different than when they had Tyreek Hill. I mean, the wide receivers they have now aren't anywhere near him. I mean, they're more possession type of guys. Certainly Juju Smith-Schuster is like that, and he only had three catches in the last two games. So it's an offense that runs through Kelce, first and foremost, but then the backs out of the backfield are a big, big part of it. And you can do that. If you're Andy, you can do that without challenging the corners. And I'm sure that's how he's going to want to try to do this. We're going to try and throw the ball 45 or 50 times, but not put it near the two cornerbacks, because that's the strength of their secondary.
So do you single? Do you single cover their wide receivers?
I would. I definitely would.
One with a safety.
Yeah, and I would double Kelce in almost any circumstance.
With Bradberry and Edwards. Bradberry and Kaiser White.
Or Gardner Johnson.
Wow, with a corner and a safety on a tight end.
Because he's that good. I mean, you can't really define him by the typical tight end standards. I mean, he's, he is just, I mean, the guy caught 110 passes this year for 1,300 yards. I mean, he's a tight end by designation. But he doesn't play like a tight end, and you can't play him like a traditional tight end. You have to do special things to deal with him. And you also have to understand that he is the fulcrum of their offense. They're not going to beat you running the ball, and they're not going to beat you throwing to Juju Smith-Schuster. If they're going to beat you, they're going to beat you with Kelce. So you have to do everything possible to take him away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, guys, it's an interesting comparison to the last offense that the Eagles played in the 49ers. And certainly, there's no comparison between Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy or Josh Johnson or Jimmy Garoppolo or some guy off the streets of San Francisco who the 49ers might have had to use at quarterback. But in terms of the skill position players and the things that those offenses try to do, you know, George Kittle to Travis Kelce, Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey to some, you know, concepts that Andy likes to use with his skill position guys and a team with the 49ers where, you know, we were having similar discussions about how do the Eagles play them? Well, you know, does it work to their advantage that the Eagles corners are so good? Because the 49ers aren't going to want to go outside anyway. I think there's it's an interesting juxtaposition.
I imagine in this case they're a little too smart to have the to use their tight end to back Hassan Reddick, right? One on one, they're not going to do that.
I would think not.
That was dumbest. But okay,
wouldn't advise.
I'm getting off script for 1 minute, and I know Mike, you've seen this. Ray, you are blissfully unaware of social media and all the, and probably all the commentary comes out. There has been more whining and crying from San Francisco over the last 2 weeks. Not just from fans and broadcasters, analysts, writers, but from their players who will not accept the fact that they lost to the Eagles, believe it only occurred because they lost their quarterback. Otherwise, they would have won the thing going away and have taken shot after shot at this Eagles team going into the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, it means nothing because, I mean, you know, if somebody wants to believe the Eagles are getting a little bulletin board material over something that Brandon Ayuk is saying or Robbie Gould is saying or whatever, I guess we've seen dumber bulletin board material. But it's just infuriating to me how guys like Debo Samuel – wait, Debo Samuel went at it with Quez Watkins on Twitter?
Yeah,
Ray,
little,
how'd you miss this? What happened?
It's a little bit of a spat yesterday. Well, Quez Watkins just tweeted. He didn't tweet at anyone in particular. He said, take your L and STFU. We know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Debo quoted it, said, put an at on it. Need to know who you're talking to, with tons of misspellings. And then Quez Watkins responded to that and said, at whoever's still whining about an old-ass game. That was the end of that.
I'm with Quez.
Me
Mike,
too.
I'm sure you've seen it. It's
yes.
I mean, I should just kind of laugh and walk away, but I just find their inability to handle a loss childish, foolish,
yeah,
annoying.
It is. It is. And we're not in a society anymore, Glenn, where the expectation is that you would just ignore that, right? Because of social media, the expectation is you're supposed to respond in kind and go back and forth, do what Quez Watkins did there.
Yeah. You're saying, you know, people have a difficult time accepting a loss in society?
Yeah, if I were the Eagles, if I were any player in the Eagles, I would just tweet hashtag scoreboard and be done with it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Okay. Let's get Robert in Germantown. Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how nice to hear you guys having fun together again. It should
Thank
be illegal.
Appreciate it.
Ray, I thought you were supposed to be on a cruise ship somewhere warm by now.
Yeah, my wife keeps reminding me of that. We will do that someday, Robert, but Super Bowl week is not the week to do that.
I picture Marie at home right now.
Yeah, she just
frying pan in hand.
Yeah, she
waiting.
Just threw something at the radio.
Right. Yeah, she's screaming.
You think this
That's
is
right,
funny?
Robert.
I'll give you funny.
Let the record state, Ray Dinger's wife is a lovely, charming woman who probably does have a little bit of anger right now.
I'm sure it's all good. So anyways, thanks for the great commentary. I think one of the things that has not been said a lot, and I've been listening all week, I don't view this game personally having a lot of passion because I don't really find a reason to hate the Kansas City Chiefs the way I would Tom Brady or the San Francisco. You know, they were playing cheap and dirty and whining and all this kind of crap. I mean, Kansas City is a class team. For me, I view football in two ways, and we're going to see two systems go head-to-head, I think, and let's see what you say. I think we're going up against a chess master who plays a very sophisticated, elegant passing game, and then we're going up against a team that's the leading rusher. They're going to slam it down their throat if they need to, although they can be somewhat elegant, too. now and then. So we got two styles. I'm excited about the chess match part of it more than I am about I hate the Chiefs. Sure, I want the Eagles to win, but I'm looking forward to a real brilliant chess match. I love the word, the way you guys have used it. I think that's spot on.
You know, it's funny when you say the chess match. I think that with Andy Reid, he's a master tactician who's memorized every chess book there is and knows all his opening move and so on, except in those chess matches when there's the timer there. Mm-hmm. And you could run out of time. I picture Andy Reid kind of his hand hovering over there, like, what am I going to do? Time's running out. it's a great point, Robert. And to his point of we don't have the animosity toward the Chiefs that we did toward the Patriots. I mean, there are the Andy Reid haters. None of us is among them, right? I believe earlier this week I watched you saying we should all spend a moment giving thanks to Andy Reid.
Yeah, I posted a video to that effect.
How'd that go over?
I don't know. I hope people understood the spirit in which it was done.
I'm not speaking to Ray anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I guess Angelo did see it then.
Yeah.
What I basically said was that I think that if you look at what the Eagles are now, that Andy Reid's fingerprints are all over this team. I mean, they were a team that was – Andy brought a certain philosophy of how to build a team, and he brought in a certain organizational mindset that took this team from where it was in 1999 to where it is now. And even though he's gone, you know, Jeff Lurie and Howie Roseman are largely following the Andy Reid blueprint here. So, you know, you think about your core leaders on this team, Cox, Graham, Kelsey, Andy brought them here. You know, the statue outside the link, you know, Philly Special, Peterson and Foles, Andy brought them here. In many ways, I mean, he sort of created the template that has taken this team to the playoffs year after year and won 10 NFC East championships. So, you know, I don't expect anybody to be rooting for Andy. I don't expect any Philadelphians to be rooting for Andy once they kick it off. But what I was saying was, yeah, just for a moment before they kick it off, it wouldn't hurt to say, hey, Andy, thanks, because you helped get us here.
Yeah, I'm not doing that, but I understand what you're saying.
No,
so, go ahead, Mike.
Ray, I was just going to say, Ray, I'd be curious to your thoughts about this. I mean, you know exactly what Dick Vermeil inherited and what he did to turn the Eagles of the mid-1970s into a team that could reach the Super Bowl. I mean, the guy didn't have a first-round draft pick, I don't think, for the first 3 years of his tenure as head coach.
Didn't have one till 79, right.
There you go. You just laid out, I think, a really compelling case for why you might argue whether Andy Reid is the best coach in Eagles history, but he's probably the most consequential when you think of it that way, that when he came in, he, as you said, he laid the blueprint for what was to come and the formula that the franchise was going to stick to kind of maintain this level of competitiveness for as long as they have.
So let me look at it. Let me ask you guys about it in another perspective. The last Super Bowl, which was the first one they ever won, which was the first championship the team had won since 1960, for most Eagle fans, the first they had ever seen. And what was so impactful about it that I witnessed was people who got to watch it with their dads, with their grandparents, with their granddaughters, and so on. The generational right, Ray, and you know this because it was best exemplified by after the game, you being in Minneapolis, your son coming into the studio, and you two sharing that very, very emotional moment.
Right.
That I think you, at the time, you didn't understand why people would want to see that, but you were everybody. That was everybody in the Delaware Valley, and that was you. And by the way, I knew you were lying when you said you weren't a fan. So that, but as you know, we argued about that for years, and it proved my point. Checkmate. Thank you. But in the larger scale, we've won one now. We got to experience that lifelong longing, just give me one and right. I'll be happy. We got it. Mm-hmm. So how will this one be different for fans, Ray?
I don't think it's going to be a whole lot different. I think the celebration will be just as jubilant. I think there'll be just as many people on Broad Street. I think there'll be just as many people climbing the poles. I think there'll be just as many people at the parade. Yeah, in this city, with what this city feels towards its football team. I don't think that winning a Super Bowl is something that will ever become old. I think every time it happens, I think it's going to be a cause for great celebration. And I think that people really, I think that the, you know, what's happened in this city now, there's a real sense of, it's a very dynamic feeling that I'm getting in the city right now. And I think part of it is it just sort of feeds off of the Phillies run. You know, what happened with the Phillies in September and the whole Red October, and it fed right into the, you know, in the Phillies World Series, the Eagles are still the only undefeated team in the NFL, and then you just sort of step from one great moment into another. And I think it's kind of a cumulative thing that it's been building, and maybe that's part of the reason why the Philadelphia fans are so optimistic that, you know, maybe we aren't really the underdogs anymore. Maybe we can really win. You know, maybe we are really,
yeah, it's funny.
Maybe we are really all that. And I don't know if it's a comfortable fit, because it's certainly not the Philadelphia I grew up in, but I think that's part of it. But to your point and to your question, how is this going to be different than Minneapolis? It won't be new, but I don't think that's necessarily going to make it any smaller.
Mike, what do you think?
I think it's a little bit different, only in that the dynamic of this team is different. I think, as you guys said, Glenn in particular, the underdog pose is the natural one for Philadelphians to take. As
yes.
a kid growing up in the suburbs, for instance, I was a huge Flyers fan. And so when they made the finals in 1985 and 1987, as excited as I was about that, I also knew that going in, they weren't the Maserati franchise in the finals. The Edmonton Oilers were. And if the Flyers happened to win, boy, that would be an incredibly great surprise. But you couldn't come away from that saying, well, they blew it. You know, they lost to the better team. For the first time in a long time, I think the perception is this Philadelphia team, these Eagles, are the better team. And so that's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yes, that's how
for
I
a lot
feel.
Of people.
Yes, I mean, when I break it down dispassionately, I think like, yeah, they're the better team. When I look at it as, you know, and listen, I'm both a broadcaster and a fan, and I don't shy away from that now. You newspaper guys got to be different. I appreciate that. But I'm more comfortable having lived in this town for 30 plus years. I'm more comfortable. Ray, let's get the dog masks out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had those and they served us well.
But that's not going to diminish the celebration.
No,
win,
no,
right?
No. The celebration is one thing. To me, it's more the feeling going in of it's odd to be a favorite.
Oh yeah, I definitely feel that. Yeah.
Right. But I do think Ray, that element of nostalgia and emotion and that feeling of there were so many people who waited their whole lives to see this, and many of them didn't get to see it. So there was this feeling of, oh, my grandfather would have loved to have seen this, or my mom would have loved to have seen this. Because the Eagles won just 5 years ago, if they win again tomorrow, that aspect of it will be toned down a little bit.
Yeah, I remember we had a caller after the Super Bowl, Ray, I don't know if you remember, who said that he went the next day or maybe even that night or the next morning to the cemetery and sat next to his dad and talked to his dad's gravestone.
Oh, sure.
Said, Dad, we finally got one.
Oh, sure. I mean, I remember the news coverage, the news coverage of going to cemeteries and how many people had Eagles jerseys draped over the headstone of the relatives, and how many at the parade, how many people were there with the ashes of their.
Yeah.
And listen, the moment that brought me to tears in Minneapolis was the moment when I hugged my son and I said that was for Grandpa.
Right.
I mean, it was those words that made me cry.
Fortunately, in the 5 years since, we have not lost a lot of people. I mean, clearly,
right.
Some of us have, but it's not that same thing. Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yes.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. 215-592-9494. By the way, this hour is sponsored by Meridian Bank. Innovative business banking for entrepreneurial success. With Ray Dinger here, Mike Sielski. In Arizona, I'm Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.